needle, a knife, and a tin bowl. He turned back to her questioningly, but she was busy adjusting the wick of the lamp, assembling the pipe, and preparing the resin. When at last the opium was bubbling and a tendril of white smoke escaped the thin aperture of the bowl, she pressed the mouthpiece of the pipe to Ah-Suk's lips. He was too exhausted to decline. He took the vapour into his mouth and held it there. There came a dawn in his chest, a liquid light. A perfect calm flooded through his body. The pain in his head and chest drained out of him as simply and suddenly as water seeping through a piece of silk. Opium, he thought dully. Opium. It was extraordinary. The drug was extraordinary. It was a miracle, a cure. She passed him the pipe again, and he supped from its end greedily, like a beggar supping from a spoon. He did not remember passing out of consciousness, but when he next opened his eyes it was daylight and the barmaid was gone. He was lying propped between two slop crates at the back of the building, with a blanket spread over his body and another folded beneath his cheek. Someone, the barmaid perhaps, must have dragged him there. Or had he come here of his own accord? Ah-Suk could not remember. He had a terrible headache, and the pain in his ribcage had returned. From within the building he could hear splashing water and the sound of knives. Then he remembered the can of opium buried in the middle of the box of tea. Dent and Co. had been paying for their wares in opium, for Britain had no more silver and China had no need for gold. How could he have been so stupid? Francis Carver had been smuggling the drug into China using the Suk family warehouse as a liaison point. Francis Carver had betrayed his father. Francis Carver had turned away from him and pretended not to understand his cry. Ah-Suk lay on his side in the alley without moving. A deadly conviction was swelling in his chest. Over the course of the next week, the buck-toothed woman kept him fed, watered, and sedated. She checked upon him several times daily, always under the pretense of feeding the pig, emptying the dishwater, or taking the laundry to the buckled line. After nightfall, she came with the pipe and fed him smoke until the pain lessened and he fell asleep. She conducted these ministrations in silence, and Ah-Suk, as he watched her, was quiet too. He wondered about her. One night she came out with her own eye blackened. He raised his hand to touch it, but she frowned and turned away. Within a few days, Ah-Suk could stand, though it was painful to do so, and within the week he could walk slowly around the yard. He knew that the Palmerston had only scheduled a fortnight stopover in Sydney. Soon it would be departing for the Victorian goldfields in the south. Ah-Suk no longer cared whether he continued on to Melbourne. He wanted only to confront Carver before the clipper sailed. Since the Palmerston had reached her mooring, Carver had not spent a single night aboard. He spent his nights at the dockside brothel in the company of the woman with copper-coloured hair. Ah-Suk saw him approaching every evening, striding along the quay with his arms swinging and his coattails flared. He did not leave the brothel until the early hours of the afternoon, and very often the copper-haired woman accompanied him to the alley doorway to bid him a private goodbye. Ah-Suk had twice glimpsed the pair walking along the docks together, well after sundown. They spoke as intimates. Each leant in close to listen when the other spoke, and the woman's hand was always in the crook of Carver's elbow, pressing close. The eighth night after Ah-Suk's assault was a Sunday, and the carousing at the brothel quit well before midnight in accordance with curfew. Ah-Suk crept around to the front of the place and saw Carver silhouetted in the central window of the upper floor, leaning his forearm against the lintel and looking down into the dark. As Ah-Suk watched, the red-haired woman came up behind him, caught his sleeve in her hand, and pulled him back out of sight into the depths of the room. Keeping to the shadows, Ah-Suk crept back to the sash window above the kitchen cutting board and slid it open. He climbed inside. The room was deserted. He looked around for a weapon, selecting finally a bone-handled cleaver from the rack above the board. He had never wielded a weapon of any kind against another man, but it gave him confidence to feel the thing heavy in his hand. He moved to find the staircase in the gloom. There were three doors at the top of the staircase, all of them closed. He listened at the first, only silence, and then the second, muted scuffling, and then the third, behind which he could hear the rumble of a man's voice, the creak of a chair, and then a woman's low reply. Ah-Suk tried to estimate the distance from the edge of the house to the upper window at which he had seen Carver standing moments before. Could this third door lead to that central room? Did it square? Yes, for he was 10 feet from the edge of the landing, and if he imagined the brothel's frontage in his mind, the window was easily 12 feet from the building's edge. Unless the second door led to a larger room, of course, and this third door led to a small one. Ah-Suk put his ear to the door. He heard the man raise his voice and speak several words in English, sharply and with a terse accent, as though he were very displeased. It must be Carver, Ah-Suk thought. It could only be Carver. Full of sudden fury, he wrenched the door open. But it was not Carver. It was the man who had beaten him little more than a week earlier. He had the buck-toothed woman on his lap, one hand encircling her throat, the other spread flat across her breast. Ah-Suk stepped back in surprise, and the man, roaring his displeasure, threw the woman from his lap and leapt to his feet. He uttered a string of syllables that Ah-Suk did not understand, and reached for his revolver, which was lying on a nightstand next to the bed. In the same instant, the buck-toothed woman reached into her bosom and withdrew a muff pistol. The man levelled his gun and pulled the hammer. Ah-Suk flinched, but the mechanism jammed. There was a spent casing in the breech. By the time the man had tipped his revolver up to release the spent casing, the woman had rushed upon him and shoved the muzzle of her pistol into his temple. Distracted, he tried to push her away, and there was a clap, and the man crumpled. His revolver fell from his hand and thudded upon the floor. Ah-Suk had not moved. The buck-toothed woman darted forward, removed the revolver from the dead man's hand, and fitted her own muff pistol in place of it. She then thrust the heavy revolver upon Ah-Suk, closed his fingers over the barrel, and motioned for him to leave, and leave quickly. Bewildered, he turned on his heel, revolver in one hand, cleaver in the other. She grabbed his shoulders, yanked him back, and directed him instead to the servants' stairwell on the other side of the hall, down which he vanished, hearing footsteps and clapping.